Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this program, I have Johan Echohawk Atkinson. Johan is of the Wolf Clan of the Tsimshian Nation. He is from Metlakatla, Alaska. Johan has been named a sober hero by Recover Alaska, and he has been sober for 1 year. On this show, Johan courageously shares his story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Johan Echohawk Atkinson.
Okay, how are you, Johan? We finally got together. We've been trying to schedule an interview time, and you know our lives have been in the way a little bit, but we're here. We're here today. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself to all our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Johan Dewayu, Lakibu Deptegu, Metlakatla, Alaska, Diwulwatgu, Tatasa, Kitkahaki. Hello, my name is Johan Echohawk Atkinson. I am of the Wolf Clan.
So you're a recipient of a Sober Hero Award from Recover Alaska. Well, I want to say congratulations on that.
Yes, I am.
I had another award, Sober a Hero Award winner on right before you. Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah.
So where are you? Where are you now?
Yeah. So I am here in my village in Metlakatla, Alaska. Yeah, Metlakatla is the most southern community in the whole entire state. We're right there on the Canadian border.
Oh, so cool.
I can see Canada from my house.
How was your weekend? Were you out camping?
No, actually, we put our camping trip on hold till next weekend. We are beginning to get ready for our canoe season down here in Southeast Alaska. So my sons and I were getting our 40-foot Tsimshian canoe ready, going over the inventory, and for our next
Canoe
training,
man,
which will be taking place.
That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it's everyone's looking forward to it, you know, because our canoe holds 18 people, and we have 3 40-foot canoes here in Metlakatla. 2 are owned by the school, and then 1 under the nonprofit that I am the president of, and we are going to be using Lawida's Canoe. That is the name of our nonprofit. We are going to be using Lawida's Canoe to be continuing to train families right.
Why
out
do you
here
think that
that
the Native men have such a hard time, you know, expressing their their feelings? Because even me, myself, I know I was taught, you know, I can't cry, I can't tell people my emotions or what I'm going through, or like the traumas or the hardships that I did. I have to like keep it in, because men don't do that, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's how it is. And That's how it is in all of our indigenous communities. You know, but growing up, not hearing those words, not hearing men say, I am proud to live a sober life. You know, there's so much more that comes with that. Now that I say that, you know, I'm proud to live a sober life, you know, and because once I got sober, I was able to confront the things that I needed to. I was able to confront that first memory that I had when I was 3 years old. You know, I was able to confront and heal that three-year-old little boy inside of me, and do a lot of reflection, how it made me feel, do a lot of forgiveness, you know. And in doing that, you know, that allowed me to have conversations with myself and with others that we don't usually have, you know, talking about emotions, talking about feelings. And when I first started having those conversations, oh, it was hard, you know, and it still is hard. Being able to let people know, or being able to have a conversation about how you feel, about how something made you feel, holding someone accountable and holding ourselves accountable, you know, that was a big one. You know, so because our parents, well, my parents' generation, they grew up with a lifestyle that closer to the trauma than I can even imagine, you know. So I could almost understand in a way, or I try to, on why they were not allowed to have the conversations needed. Or no, maybe not allowed, but maybe they just didn't know how. There was something an elder told me that really helped me on my journey. You know, because I had a lot of anger growing up and during my healing journey, during my sobriety. I had a lot of anger in the decisions that were made, the things that I went through. And I shared this one with a bunch of people one time. And an elder told me at a wellness conference, he goes, you know, Johan, our parents did the best they could with what they know, or they did the best they could with what they were taught. And you have to think about that, is because they're closer to the trauma than you will ever be. And I was like, you know, and at first I was, it didn't really resonate with me on what that meant, you know. But later on, I went to my hotel room and did a lot of self-reflection. I was like, yeah, you know, so that helped me forgive. That helped me understand a little more. And it made me feel grateful that I'm able to have these conversations that my parents didn't know how to have, or my parents' generation didn't know how to have, you know. Talk about your emotions. Allow yourself to cry. And to be able to be there for someone, you know. And it was being able to be that support, and to receive support, you know. But every day it's still a struggle, you know, because if it wasn't, then our communities would be healthy, they'd be thriving, mind, body, and soul, you know. But our communities still face a lot of unspoken problems. You know, there's a lot of men till this day, you know, suffer in silence. And I was one of them, you know. Absolutely. I totally get it. I get where they're coming from. It's not easy to be able to let people know, like, hey, I'm hurting right now. You know, that's the last thing us as men wanted to do, because the men that raised us never did that, never taught us how to do that, or let alone tell us that it's okay. You know, having a generation not knowing how to do that, you know, there's a lot of there's an attitude of you always got to be tough all the time. And I know that's common through every single community. You know, I've been fortunate to travel around the state of Alaska in many communities, you know, working with young men and men. And it's still common, you know. So that's part of the reason why I'm very vocal about the work I do, very vocal about my sobriety, you know, and always willing to have these conversations. Even when I don't know what to say because I'm still navigating through one how to deal with life now that I'm sober and how to deal with life, confronting all these feelings and emotions and in the past, you know, I still face them. Even though I don't know what to say sometimes, I will say just that, be like, you know, I don't have any words for this right now, you know, but I know I'm going to go through it. Many times I say, I will go through this with you. You know, I'm not going to run and hide and suppress it with alcohol or like how I've always done, you know. So there's that change that I want in my community, you know. I know it first starts with me, you know. I have to better myself.
That is so true. And I think you're talking about like intergenerational trauma, how it was passed down by, you know, not knowing how to heal, you know, from the things that you went through, from things that your dad, your mom, you know, your parents, and then their parents and their parents, you know, going back to not only the boarding schools, the, you know, the smallpox, when that, you know, decimated the population of, you know, all the native villages. You know, the religious part of it where our practices were considered shamanism, you know, or that were like heathen, being called heathens, you know, because of the way that we, you know, healed and the way that we were spiritual with nature and animals and the land, you know, just because it was not how they just because it was different from them, you know, we were heathens. So even learning how to heal from that and you know, just start to even talk about it, it's so hard, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how the Christian influence is very strong here in my community, and it always has been. You know, one of my first memories that I had of my grandfather, and my grandfather was born 1901. You know, he's been through, you know, he lived through quite a bit and seen a lot in his time. And I remember asking him, I was sitting on his lap, I think I was like 8 years old. He would tell me stories. And my grandparents, you know, they were fluent in their language, so they were speaking Tsimshian all day, all night with each other, between my grandma and grandpa. You know, they would laugh in Tsimshian, and then they would also fight and argue in Tsimshian, you know. So it was, and I remember asking my grandpa one time, I said, Grandpa, can you teach me Tsimshian and what you and grandma are saying? And he told me, no, I can't teach you Tsimshian because you need to learn the way of the modern world. And I didn't think nothing of it. You know, I was 8 years old. Like, okay, you know, I guess not. But I know that what heavily influenced in that is my grandparents were very strong Christians. There was probably about a dozen pictures of Jesus in my grandparents' house on every single wall. They never honored their Tsimshian culture and their ancient crest, you know, and it didn't make them a bad people because they were, you know, my heroes. You know, my grandmother was the sweetest woman I've ever met in my entire life till this day. I never knew that the Tsimshian people had clans up until I was an adult. I never knew my grandfather came from the Bear Clan. I never knew that my grandmother came from the Raven Clan. You know, I never even knew how to say good morning or hello in our Tsimshian language because of how much our culture was demonized from the missionaries. Metlakatla was first created, was first founded with a missionary. And through that missionary, through those first group of Tsimshians that came over in 1887, you know, it was, okay, we're going to live a Christian life. Everything else no longer exists. So that's the community that my grandparents grew up in. So then when I was born, you know, being a young Tsimshian boy running around the res, you know, because Metlakatla is the only reservation in the state of Alaska. So, you know, running around, you know, the res is being wild. I never knew that part of my culture. I didn't know who I was as a Tsimshian because that was never talked about. That was never honored with my grandparents. That was never honored with my father, with my aunties and uncles. You know, they were, the only thing that I knew was that Jesus was supposed to be the way and the only way, you know? And so it took a lot for me to realize on who I was, you know, who I was as a Tsimshian, you know, and what that meant before Christianity, before colonization. You know, now I know that us as Tsimshian, you know, here we have always been in this land for 15,000 plus years, you know, and it was only this little sliver of time in this little 200 years or so where we lost who we were. You know, but now we're bringing it back. Now our culture is so strong. Now we're bringing back our language. Now our young people know, every single young Tsimshian in my village knows what crest they belong to. We just had the third, fourth, and fifth graders just hosted a feast for the parents of the third, fourth, and fifth graders. And it was the most beautiful thing ever seen. It was so powerful. Every single third, fourth, and fifth grader here in my village, they wore their Tsimshian cultural vest that had their crest proudly on their back. They took turns going up and speaking our traditional language. They sang our Tsimshian songs. They served our community, everybody that walked into our longhouse, food, you know, and it was such an amazing thing to witness, you know, on how we live our lifestyles today. But I know that that lifestyle, you know, wasn't a lifestyle that my grandparents grew up in, that my parents grew up in. I asked my grandfather just for a little sliver of that, you know, please share the language, you know, and he told me no, you know, it was, you know, because of how
and you know, that ties in with, you know, the whole you know, alcoholism and drug use and everything. Cultural identity is so important. You know, a lot of people, like you said, didn't know, you know, their culture and how their people were before, you know, colonialism, and that is a huge part, I believe, is a huge part of why people suppress their emotions and their traumas and everything with these substances. And that's how I dealt with it. That was my coping, you know, was drinking. And once I drank enough, I would let it all out and be, you know, a crying mess, you know. It would just like explode after I drank a whole bunch. And that's how I dealt with it, how unhealthy that was. I was dealing with my emotions and you know, and coming to learn that dealing with generations of you know, traumas that I didn't know of that were just, you know, just like passed down, not knowing, you know. And that's how a lot of men, women, that don't know their culture, don't know their identity, are dealing with it, you know.
Yeah, you know, and when we talk about people, you know, when we talk about people rediscovering their culture and their identity, you know, that's discovering who they are. You know, being alcohol and drug free is a big part of that, you know, because every single one of our values in our indigenous tribe is a big pillar of that. The foundation is respect, is respect for each other and respect for ourselves, you know, and being able to live an alcohol free life, a drug free life, living a sober life. You know, that is a commitment, and that is a commitment that you're taking to take care of yourself, take care of your body, to be able to make right decisions. And that's that self-respect that each and every single one of us deserve. You deserve to be your best self every single day. You deserve that respect. And I wish someone told me that when I was, you know, I wish an adult told me that. You deserve to live a healthy life. You deserve to be your best self. You know, you deserve to be able to confront every problem that you face in a healthy way. You know, or even witness that, you know, because like I said earlier, I never heard a man say my whole entire life, I'm proud to be sober, you know, or I am living an alcohol-free life. So even witnessing that was, you know, I think would have been something that I would have never forgotten, you know. So when people are discovering who they are, you know, their culture, you know, that's a huge part of our culture, you know, is taking care of yourself, you know, and to be able to take care of one another, you know. And it's more than just our singing and dancing and our language, you know, and all that is beautiful, you know, and it gives us strength and it's healing, you know, but there's other things that are just as important, you know, is to live a healthy lifestyle, you know. And I'm doing that. I am honoring that by making a commitment to myself and my sons where I'm going to live a sober life for the rest of my life. You know, and no one or nothing keep me from walking that
path. You say, you know, you're living your healing. I said something before. I said, once you heal yourself, then you can start to help other people heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what comes to mind when you say that is, again, back to my very first memory in life. Like, this is like my first memory that I have of being in this world was violence that was created from alcohol. So, you know, being able to confront that, give that some thought, you know, heal from that, go through the emotions that I needed to go through living a sober life was my own healing, was a healing that I needed to go through to make me a better man, to be able to help me confront the problems that I face today, you know. So it's in a healthy way, you know, because again, it was so easy to suppress it, so easy to run from it, to hide from it, you know, pour that alcohol and forget about it. You know, and I used to do the same thing, you know, it was suppress it, forget about it, and it build up and build up and build up, and then chaos, you know. So that's something that I promised myself that I would never do, or waking up the next day, and having to think, oh man, what happened last night? You know, it's like, oh no, you know, like what you know, like where's my vehicle, or where's so-and-so, or what am I doing here? You know, that's just such a dangerous situation that I put myself through too many times. I had to hold myself accountable, but like, as a man, as a father, you know, tell myself, this is not the lifestyle that you want to be living. And I had to tell myself that many times, you know, because like I said, it took me multiple times to get sober, to live a sober life. This is the third attempt. And both attempts too, as well, they were, you know, I would make it publicly known, I'm never drinking alcohol again, you know, I am 1 week strong, and I put it on my social medias, you know, but then I was right back at, you know, the party with my friends, you know, right back doing that cycle of making bad decisions, you know, not living an honorable life. I knew that I had to do something drastic for me to have the strength to get through that, to be able to stay in that path. And for me, it was including my sons. It was like, all right, I need your help, guys, you know, and let them know that I need their help, and be okay with that, you know, like, you know, because till this day, I have a hard time asking for help. You know, I have to practice that. I gotta, you know, and every day I get better and better. But to completely humble myself and be able to, like, okay, this is it. I need your help, you know. And I had to tell my sons, I need you to hold your dad accountable. But it took a long time to get here, you know. It wasn't easy, and I will never say it was easy, you know. Even till this day, I still have moments where I struggle, where I have to tell myself, no, I will continue this path that I knew I was meant to be on. You know, I'm not going to do things that are not going to allow me to be my best self. I got too much on the line, you know. My sons are always watching me, what I do every single day, every single minute. And they deserve to have a healthy, they deserve to have a sober, they deserve to have a dad that is his best self. And
well, those are awesome words, Johan.
I deserve to be my best self.
Thank you. Thank you so much for, you know, having the courage to recover out loud and tell your story and share on this podcast. And congratulations on being named a sober hero by Recover Alaska. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for the invitation on this podcast. It has been an honor.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person who is walking with us on this healing journey. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.